Khrushchev instructs the satellites. In 1962, Khrushchev formally extended the Soviet narcotics operation to the East European satellites. The strategic leaders, first secretaries, premier ministers, ministers of defense, chiefs of general staff, and special assistants of the satellites were summoned to attend a secret meeting in Moscow to discuss negative developments in the socialist economies. Romania, Albania, and Yugoslavia were not present. Sejna was one of the officials in attendance. High-level Soviet officials attending the meeting included Nikita Khrushchev, Leonid Brezhnev, Mikhail Suslov, and Andrei Kirilenko. It was at this meeting that Khrushchev formally laid out the Soviet strategy. Mao Zedong and the Chinese were smart, he began, referring to the drug business. They were also more imaginative and operative. Why should we let the Chinese have a free hand in this world market? He asked, and then he answered his own question. The Chinese were good, but the Soviet bloc intelligence services had a much superior organization and should move as fast as possible to use drugs and narcotics both to cripple capitalist society and to finance more revolutionary activities. Khrushchev then discussed the many benefits to be derived from this business. It would provide a nice income and be a source of much-needed foreign exchange to finance intelligence operations. It would undermine the health and morale of American servicemen. Because people on drugs would be undependable in crises or emergencies, the drug business would weaken the human factor in the defense situation. Khrushchev dealt with the impact on education at length. American schools were high-priority targets, because this was where the future leaders of the bourgeoisie were to be found. Another high-priority target Khrushchev identified was the American work ethic, pride, and loyalty, all of which would be undermined through drugs. Finally, drugs and narcotics would lead to a decrease in the influence of religions and, he added, under certain conditions, could be used to create chaos. When we discussed this strategy, Khrushchev concluded, there were some who were concerned that this operation might be immoral. But we must state categorically, he stressed, that anything that speeds the destruction of capitalism is moral, equals Lenin, ed. Only a few questions were raised by those attending the meeting. Janos Kadar, the first secretary from Hungary, expressed concern that the drug operation should not interfere with the progress that had been achieved under peaceful coexistence. He was referring to the economic and technical assistance that had begun flowing in from the West. Accordingly, he suggested that third world countries that were not regarded with suspicion by the United States should be used to run the operations. This, indeed, has been one of the techniques employed to maintain a safe distance between the Soviet bloc countries and the actual running of narcotics operations. Throughout Latin America, for example, while Soviet bloc intelligence agents exercise overall control and direction, indigenous personnel are heavily relied upon to run the actual operations. This technique can also be seen in respect of operations within the Soviet bloc that have been designed to service Western Europe. For example, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency prepared a summary report on the role of Bulgaria in international narcotics trafficking in 1984 for congressional hearings. A variety of sources, all consistent, were referenced in the report, which covered the 1970-84 time period. One organization highlighted in the DEA report was Kintex, a Bulgarian export-import firm established in 1968. Kintex was managed by the Bulgarian secret police and acted on secret orders from Moscow, too. Kintex was established, according to DEA sources, mainly to provide a mechanism for using foreign nationals inside Bulgaria to manufacture and ship narcotics to Western Europe and munitions to the Near East. The foreign operatives were Turkish, Syrian, and Jordanian nationals. Coordination meetings included traffickers from Greece, Italy, Iraq, and Iran. While Bulgaria was identified in the early 1970s in a classified CIA study as being a new center for directing narcotics and arms trafficking, all the data in the DEA report on people actually handling drugs refers to foreigners operating inside Bulgaria. The Bulgarian government's response to U.S. complaints was to deny any involvement. The presence of foreign nationals on their soil constituted no crime, and no Bulgarian nationals either inside or outside Bulgarian territory have been implicated for. Another leader to speak at the Moscow meeting was Walter Ulbricht, the first secretary from the German Democratic Republic. He used the occasion to press for greater German participation. At that time, the Germans did not have a charter to conduct strategic intelligence and therefore, Ulbricht stressed, Germany would require assistance to exploit its resources in Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. Strategic intelligence, which includes sabotage, terrorism, deception, and espionage, was where the narcotics offensive originated and had its home. By 1964, East Germany had been granted permission to begin strategic intelligence operations. Later in the day over drinks, Khrushchev nudged Sejna playfully with his elbow and, with a gleam in his eye, he revealed the secret name of the Soviet drug trafficking operation, Druzhba Narodov, which, roughly translated, means Friendship of Nations. The clever cover name with its deceptive play on words was pure Khrushchev. This meeting in Moscow was a unique event. The Soviet narcotic strategy was considered exceedingly sensitive and was assigned the highest security classification. People without an absolute need to know would not be told about the operation. Following the meeting, which was the official beginning of the operation, with very few exceptions, all coordination and cooperation were handled on a bilateral basis. The satellite leaders returned to their respective countries and proceeded to develop their individual plans amid the tightest secrecy. Sejna has described the manner in which the Czechoslovak plans were developed, briefed to the Defense Council, approved, and then implemented. This description provides especially an interesting insight into the manner in which very sensitive operational plans were developed, controlled, and kept secret. The task of developing the plan was assigned to five people, one each from the Administrative Organs Department, Civilian Intelligence, Military Intelligence, the Foreign Department, and the Military Health Administration. Sejna was in charge as Secretary of the Defense Council. The five people, plus a cook from Sejna's secretariat, were sequestered in a villa at Rusvoltova No. 1, which incidentally was where Castro stayed when he came to visit Prague. Their work was monitored by the Soviet advisor to the chief of ZS and by Yuri Rudolf and Vaslav Havranek, who were the Administrative Organs Department officials in charge of military intelligence and military counterintelligence. Only five other Czechoslovak officials had access to the villa: the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Defense, the Chief of the General Staff, the Chief of the Second Administration, Civilian Intelligence, and Sejna. After this group had assembled the overall plan, the only people who had access to it were the seven members of the Defense Council. When the narcotics plan was finished, it was considered more sensitive even than the annual intelligence plans. Nine copies were made and placed in sealed envelopes and taken to the Defense Council, where they were opened for the members to examine prior to their vote to approve the plan. The Minister of Defense and Minister of Interior jointly presented the plan to the Defense Council. The plan addressed research, development, influence of drugs on humans, testing, production, distribution, money handling, how the profits would be used, and the individuals who would have specific personal responsibilities. During the presentation, the Minister of Interior, Rudolf Barak, explained that not only would this action serve to destroy Western society, but in addition the West will pay high money for it. Antonin Novotny, First Secretary and Chairman of the Defense Council, asked how much, and Barak responded, "Enough to finance the entire Czechoslovak intelligence service." As soon as the discussion was completed, not even waiting until the end of the meeting as was normally the case, Sejna collected all the copies and resealed them in their envelopes. All but three copies were destroyed. These three copies went to Military Intelligence, ZS, the Second Administration of the Minister of Interior, and the files of the Defense Council, which were in Sejna's secretariat. No written instructions to implement the plan were issued. The head of each department or agency that had a specific task came to one of the three offices where copies of the plan were held to read that portion on a need-to-know basis. For example, for scientific development and production, the chiefs of the rear services and medical administration independently came to Sejna's office to read the pertinent portion of the plan. Sejna's job was to make certain each official understood his responsibility. The official was then required to sign a statement saying that he understood the directive, after which the official departed. This process applied even to the Minister of Defense. All orders were verbal. Reports on progress were due back to Sejna in 6 months. Sejna himself then assembled and presented these reports to the Defense Council. A year later, in 1963, Khrushchev, displeased with the speed with which the operation was progressing, directed General Major Nikolai Savinkin, the deputy head of the Administrative Organs Department of the Central Committee of the CPSU. He would become head in 1964 following General Mironov's death in a plane crash, to visit each satellite and Cuba personally and prepare a detailed plan to accelerate and coordinate the narcotics operation. The Administrative Organs Department is one of the two or three most important departments of the Central Committee 5. It controls the Ministry of Defense, the Ministry of Interior, KGB, and the Ministry of Justice. This is the department that directed Operation Druzhba Narodov 6. Other organizations that participated are described in the next chapter. Savinkin's plan was approved by the Soviet Defense Council and directives were sent to the various satellites. These directives, which came through Sejna as Secretary of the Czechoslovak Defense Council and Chief of Cabinet at the Ministry of Defense, covered a wide variety of actions. Research, production, organization of transportation, organization of cooperation among satellites in different regions of the world, the need for cooperation in assisting Cuba to infiltrate all Latin American operations, and what form that cooperation would take, names of specific people in different countries who would assist in the distribution and associated propaganda and disinformation. Instructions were also received as to which specific financial institutions were to be used in laundering and transferring money. In the case of Czechoslovakia, at least 15 different banks in 9 countries, including Singapore, Vienna, Argentina, and Holland, were identified. The Soviet bank in London became increasingly involved in the transfer of drug profits, *7. The propaganda and disinformation instructions were especially interesting. Propaganda, disinformation, and deception are exceptionally important dimensions of all Soviet operations. Each decision that is made is thoroughly prepared, including the monitoring or oversight, secrecy provisions, that is, who is to be told what, and the political plan to facilitate the implementation. The political plan is a euphemism for the deception that is to be employed. Disinformation and propaganda are developed to support the basic deception plan. In the narcotics and drug operation, the basic thrust of propaganda and disinformation was to cause the blame to be placed on society. Additionally, and in support of this basic thrust, corruption data would be released to discredit individuals and organizations considered hostile to Soviet interests. 8. There were two different propaganda campaigns, one waged against youth and one against the population at large. This involved the Department of Special Propaganda, the Propaganda Department, and the International Foreign Department, with a special coordination center set up in the Administrative Organs Department. The basic strategy for propaganda and deception had first been set forth in 1961 or 1962 by Soviet General Kalashnik, deputy to the chief of the main political administration, the ideological watchdog of the Soviet military establishment. Kalashnik was the chief ideologist at the main political administration. Sejna recalls his simple instructions. Our propaganda must be directed to our enemy, not to our friends. The word friends meant drugs and narcotics. Propaganda and deception were to be used to divert attention away from drugs and narcotics, especially insofar as the middle and upper classes were concerned, and to cause these same people to focus their attention on problems of nuclear war, the Vietnam War, and anti-Americanism. Editor's note. In the late 1960s, UK employees of the Russian bank in London, Moscow Narodny Bank, observed that Russian officers of the institution were conspicuously liberal with entertainment and expense accounts, often inviting lowly members of staff to join them for extended, liquid lunches. For very many years, Viktor Gerashenko was either a senior officer or the head of the bank. Under Gorbachev, Gerashenko was transferred to head the central banking institution and was accordingly seen at successive annual meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank after Russia had acceded to the Bretton Woods institutions. He was restored to the position of head of the Russian Central Bank under President Yeltsin amid the turmoil which overwhelmed the Russian financial markets in August 1998. These propaganda instructions were extended in 1964 in a letter signed by Leonid Brezhnev, which was discussed at a meeting of the Czechoslovak Defense Council. The letter directed that data on the Chinese drug and narcotics trafficking operation should be made public, to advertise China's role as the source of illicit trafficking and thus to draw attention away from the Soviet operation. One of the first articles written for this purpose appeared in Pravda on September 13, 1964. It was written by Vyov Chinnikov and was entitled The Drug Dealers. See also page 146 and note 43, page 152. In September 1963, the top leadership, first secretaries, premier ministers, ministers of defense and interior, and selected staff, a total of up to 15 from each country except for Romania, Albania, and Yugoslavia, which were not present, met in Moscow for the annual conference on the plan and tactics to be followed in the coming year. The diplomatic, intelligence, and party initiatives, the integrated process, for the coming year, were reviewed by the Soviet leadership. The principal speaker was Mikhail Suslov, chief ideologist of the Communist Party and one of the key officials in the development of strategic plans. In discussing drugs, Suslov began by pointing out that the decision that had been taken earlier on drug and narcotics trafficking was the right course of action. As the Soviets had assessed Latin America in the 1950s, they had recognized that the Latin American countries were dependent on the bourgeoisie, especially the United States. The Soviets had decided that this had to change. The Latin American countries had to be made dependent on the Soviet Union. The primary instruments to be used were drugs and other forms of corruption, which the Soviets had concluded were widespread throughout the Americas. The Soviets referred to the revolutionary movement in Latin America as the Second Liberation. The first liberation had been the liberation from Spain and Portugal. The second would be the intended liberation from the United States and the bourgeoisie nine. The third liberation would be the transition into communism. Suslov explained that it was necessary to disarm anti-communist and U.S. friends before the second liberation could take place. The Soviets believed that the corrupted bourgeoisie had already accepted the idea of revolution, which was in fact a deliberate Soviet-induced deception. The approach taken to encourage acceptance of the notion of revolution was to argue that Latin American countries were destined to proceed through revolutionary stages, in which the changes that would be accomplished turn out to be beneficial. In these early stages, there was, by Soviet direction, to be no mention of socialism or even use of socialistic phrases, to avoid scaring people away from the concept of revolution. The Soviets asserted that five factors would prove most instrumental in speeding the revolutionary process throughout Latin America. 1. The US-USSR military balance. The Soviet Union needed to be strong enough to stop the United States from interfering before the revolution could be started. 2. Bankruptcy of colonialism. Through propagandizing the exploitation and impropriety of colonial policies, and, naturally, the protectionism that went along with colonialism, the United States' ties to Latin America would be weakened and ultimately severed. 3. Organization of ideology and material supply of the liberation forces. Better organization and a united ideological offensive were required among the liberation forces. The movement had become disjointed under Stalin. Ideological unity was necessary, and the supply of material assistance, money, arms, training, organization, needed to be improved throughout Latin America. 4. The defeat of the United States in Vietnam. This was important to split the United States at home and to make it difficult for the United States ever to become involved in foreign wars again. Also, it was important for nationalistic forces to recognize that the United States could not be counted upon to assist its allies against the revolutionary process. 5. The demoralization of the United States and its neighbors on both sides, North and South. Drugs were a principal instrument to be used in bringing about this demoralization, with demoralization by drugs to be referred to, as noted, as the Pink Epidemic, see page 33. The Soviets believed that when the Pink Epidemic covered the North and South American continents, the situation would be highly satisfactory for the revolution. Suslov reviewed the situation in Latin America, using data gathered by Soviet intelligence, local communist parties, and from Cuban and Warsaw Pact intelligence agents who had penetrated the Latin American drug operations, making special reference to Paraguay, Jamaica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico. Suslov asserted that 70% of Latin American bureaucrats were tied into, that is, corrupted by, drug operations. In Mexico, he said, 80% of the bureaucrats were tied into drugs or involved with other forms of corruption. In Latin America, 65% of Catholic priests use drugs, he said. Catholic priests have been a primary target of Soviet strategy in Latin America. 4 years later, at a meeting in 1967, Boris Ponomarev explained to Czechoslovak officials that according to Soviet estimates, 80% of Latin American priests were anti-American, and slightly over 60% were inclined to the left 12. This particular statistic was heavily weighted by young priests, whom the Soviets believed would exert important influence in Latin America over the ensuing 20 years. Boris Ponomarev advanced three reasons for working with these younger priests: to help the revolution move forward, to use the church to help distribute drugs, and to use priests to gain additional information on drug trafficking networks. But, reverting to 1963, after reviewing intelligence statistics on the drug business, Suslov discussed two special groups against whom drugs were to be used. The first was the bourgeois leadership. Second was a group referred to as the lumpen proletariat, the unemployed who often turned to crime or prostitution for survival. A somewhat equivalent term to describe this group might be the downtrodden proletariat, 13. As Mikhail Suslov explained, this group was particularly vulnerable to the lure of drugs. That was all to the good, because it was to the advantage of the Revolutionary War movement to destroy this group, as it was useless and a burden. Its members did not want to work. They were the main consumers of drugs and were to be destroyed. The key revolutionary tactic was to prepare a revolutionary elite, and these downtrodden proletariat were not part of that elite. To further the drug business, Mikhail Suslov also emphasized 4 points. 1. Use Cuba to help establish drug operations. 2. Be certain to obtain security clearances on all personnel first, before involving them in drug trafficking and handling operations. 3. In the communist parties, brief only the first secretaries on drug activities. The individual communist parties were to be kept at arm's length from drug operations for two main reasons. First, the communist parties were believed to have been infiltrated by foreign agents. Accordingly, knowledge of drug operations was to be kept away from the parties, and all personnel were to be carefully cleared prior to their involvement in drug activities. Secondly, drug operations yielded money, and this in turn meant possible fiscal independence. Drug operations were therefore to be kept out of the hands of the communist parties as a means of ensuring their continuing dependence on Moscow. Drug money used to finance foreign communist parties would first be channeled to Moscow and then to the various parties according to their needs. 4. It was important to induce indigenous Latin American intelligence, counterintelligence, and military forces to become more involved in drug operations. These organizations represented important sources of pro-US feelings, and drug-assisted corruption was to be used to undermine such pro-American attitudes. Khrushchev's style was to sit and interrupt the speaker to make additional points as he saw fit. He first interrupted Suslov to stress the need for caution. "Comrade Suslov," he interjected, "is particularly careful. I try to force him to speed up the drug process, to make the bourgeoisie pay for the revolution, but I agree with him. We cannot take higher risk than we are taking now." At another point, Khrushchev interrupted and explained, "Some people equate drugs and alcohol, but alcohol is not like drugs. We give vodka to Soviet soldiers, and we proceed from success to success." Suslov also pointed out that it was necessary to begin creating reserves for the Latin American revolutionary forces so that their needs would be satisfied when they were ready to step out from the underground. Accordingly, all Warsaw Pact countries were to begin contributing to a Latin America reserves account. Suslov's speech left nothing to the imagination. Operation Druzhba Narodov was to be global in scope. The bourgeoisie in all countries were targets. Drugs and narcotics were to be primary weapons for use in the world revolutionary offensive. As the Soviet Druzhba Narodov strategy took shape in 1962-64, probably the best, most succinct description of the targeting philosophy was provided to the Czechoslovak leadership in 1964 during a visit to Bulgaria. Todor Zhivkov, first secretary of the Communist Party of Bulgaria, explained to the visiting Czechoslovak delegation that the United States was the primary target of the Soviet bloc's drug offensive because it was the worst enemy, the main enemy, because it was simple to move drugs into the United States, and because there was an unlimited supply of hard money there. References to Chapter 4, 1. U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, the involvement of the People's Republic of Bulgaria in international narcotics trafficking, in U.S. Congress, Senate, Drugs and Terrorism, 1984, hearing before the Subcommittee on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse of the Committee on Labor and Human Resources, August 2, 1984, U.S. Government Printing Office, Washington, D.C., 1984. 2. Ibid, page 66. 3. Ibid, page 58. 4. Ibid, page 61. 5. The importance of this department is also emphasized in John J. Giac, Czechisty, A History of the KGB, Lexington, Massachusetts, Lexington Books, 1988, pages 148,151-152. 6. The head of the Administrative Organs Department, incidentally, was also the Soviet official in charge of the Soviet arms control operation during the 1960s. 7. Dr. Zdzisław M. Rurars was a member of Polish Military Intelligence, ZLL, for 25 years, economic advisor to the Ministries of Foreign Trade and Foreign Affairs, and to the First Secretary and Ambassador to Japan before defecting to the United States in 1981. He explained to the author that before he left, he believed the number of Soviet banks, financial institutions, and joint ventures around the world that were available to assist in the money handling process was about 300. Subsequently, he learned from a French source that the number had risen to 400. 8. While there is no known connection, one example of an event which could have been triggered by the Soviets was the drug scandal involving the old Bureau of Narcotics, in which U.S. federal agents were found to be selling heroin or protecting drug dealers. This scandal was disclosed by Attorney General Ramsey Clark in 1968. It resulted in almost every agent in the New York Bureau being fired, forced to resign, or transferred. Edward J. Epstein, Agency of Fear, Opiates and Political Power in America, New York, G.P. Putnam Sons, 1977, page 105. See also U.S. Congress, Senate, International Traffic in Narcotics, hearing before the Committee on Foreign Relations, July 1, 1971, Washington, D.C. U.S. Government Printing Office, 1971, page 29. 9. Sejnov first heard this view on the liberation phases in about 1962 from Andrei Kirilenko, Khrushchev's deputy, at a meeting of the Warsaw Pact leadership. Kirilenko explained that the Soviet strategy was to keep the United States out of the world revolutionary process by building a fire under the American window. 10. Pink Epidemic was the codename for the operation to serve and extend the cocaine epidemic, which the Soviets believed would be the wave of the future. See Chapter 3. 11. Miguel Bolanos Hunter was a former counterintelligence officer in the counter-espionage section of the Nicaraguan state security apparatus. In an interview for the Oral History Project, International Security Studies Program, Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, Bolanos reviewed the origins, structure, and missions of the state security apparatus. With respect to the church, he said, to the Sandinistas, the traditional Catholic church is enemy number one. There is no doubt about it. Testimony of Miguel Bolanos Hunter in Yuri Arayanin et al., Hydra of Carnage, Lexington, Massachusetts, Lexington Books, 1986, page 309. As Jan Sejna explained, religions are viewed as an especially dangerous force within socialist countries and in all countries being prepared for revolution, given the conflict between Marxist and religious morality. The attack on religion is at the core of the revolution. Gorbachev proclaimed on December 15, 1987, after all, that there must be no let-up in the war against religion because as long as religion exists, communism cannot prevail. We must intensify the obliteration of all religions wherever they are being practiced or taught ed. Within socialist countries, the long-term, 50-year, objective was to eliminate the importance and influence of religions. Outside the socialist countries, propaganda, deception, diplomacy, and intelligence services were to be used to destroy, influence, or use the various religions. Within the Third World countries, religions were viewed as temporary friends because they supported the revolutionary spirit. Overall, the principal directions of Soviet activity directed against religions were as follows: to encourage leading religious centers to support the Soviet policy of peaceful coexistence. It to compel leading religious groups to deny their support for capitalism and to promote the idea that the rich countries must help the poor countries. O to support desired political, social, and economic changes which will bring the communists to power in the various targeted countries. O through propaganda and deception, to show that socialism is allied with religious groups in the fight for a better life generally. O to use religious groups to exploit and further disarmament, that is, to exploit the idea that it is against the will of God to kill people. For the revolutionaries are content to invoke God, of course, when it suits their purposes to do so, ed. but to build a mass psychological perception of nuclear warfare as signifying the end of the world, and to infiltrate the religious centers with the following order of priority: 1. The Vatican, 2. Muslims, 3. Jews, 4. Buddhists, 5. Reactionary sections. With reference to reactionary sects, Czechoslovak intelligence had 3 clerical agents within the Vatican in the late 1960s. They were located, Sejna asserted, within the sections responsible for foreign policy, finance, and ideology. The Muslims were particularly important because of their role within the Middle East and Africa. One consequence of the Arab-Israeli War was that it enabled Soviet bloc intelligence services to infiltrate all of the leading Muslim centers. The Jewish community was regarded as an especially important target to assist the Soviet Union to gain economic influence over the West, and as an especially important source for intelligence information, and as a liberal counterweight against right-wing forces. The most difficult religion for the Soviets to manipulate was Buddhism because divergent physical characteristics made the religious order difficult to infiltrate. Reactionary, conservative sects, which were also anti-communist, were regarded as having considerable political influence. These sects also desired to achieve control and power, which the communist plan exploited. In 1967, the communists had obtained inside information on, or influence over, by their estimate, in excess of 40% of the various sects and other religions. According to the Communist Manual of Instruction of Psychological Warfare, as it seems in foreign nations that the church is the most ennobling influence, each and every branch and activity of each and every church must, one way or another, be discredited. Religion must become unfashionable by demonstrating broadly, through psychopolitical indoctrination, that the soul is non-existent and that man is an animal. Reprinted in Brainwashing, a synthesis of the communist textbook on psychopolitics, Meiborn, Victoria, Australia. New Times Limited, 1956, page 35. See also Introduction to the Second Eddie Tie Off the Present Work, pages 9 to 11, ed. 12. These figures are supported by Western surveys. For example, by the early 1970s, 78% of all Catholic priests in Chile identified themselves as being on the left politically. James R. Whalen, Out of the Ashes, Opsit, page 712. 13. Sejna had first heard the term lumpenproletariat in the early 1950s. At that time, it was the label attached to that portion of the proletariat who were not rising up to oppose the bourgeoisie, that is to say, those who were not easily recruited to the communist movement. In 1963, the term took on new meaning. It was now used to describe the unemployed and people who did not want to work or contribute. The Soviets believed that such people often turned to crime to support themselves, and, indeed, in their view, being unemployed was almost synonymous with being a criminal. Communist studies also concluded that this group of people, in addition to crime, often turned to drugs, both the sale of drugs and their use. As a result of this linkage to crime, drugs, and other immoral activities, Soviet and East European analysts concluded that the lumpenproletariat could be profitably used to accelerate the destabilization of the United States. This conclusion was further strengthened because the big cities were considered to be the principal revolutionary centers within the United States, and life in these cities was becoming more and more dominated by the lumpenproletariat. Additionally, military service draftees were believed to be extensively recruited from the so-called lumpenproletariat, which was thus a high-priority target for corruption because of their potentially adverse effect on the military. This was not a recruitment exercise. Members of the lumpenproletariat were still not considered suitable for the revolutionary movement, but they were a key target because of the damage they could do to capitalist society through destabilization and demoralization, and therefore were an asset to be used to help in the revolutionary process before being destroyed following the revolution. Within the lumpenproletariat, the minorities were identified as especially important because they constituted over 70% of it, according to the relevant Soviet studies. Accordingly, race became an integral dimension of the targeted class, with black people and Hispanics being the two most important minorities. The Soviets believed that there were growing divisions between the whites and the non-white minorities, and that the U.S. government could not solve the problem. As Moscow analyzed the situation, capitalism was dying, and as the economic and social situation deteriorated, more and more members of the lumpen proletariat would be generated. The effect of this conclusion was to highlight the importance of the lumpen proletariat even further. By 1967, the concept of lumpen proletariat was dominated by the image of the inner city poor, especially the minorities. Most of the Third World was also regarded as lumpen proletariat. Even so, whereas in 1963, this group was viewed as the main consumer of drugs, still, the main target to whom the drugs were to be marketed was not this group, but rather the elite. By 1967, this had also changed. With respect to discussions of Soviet narcotic strategy directed against the United States and the lumpen proletariat, which by this time and in this context meant the inner city poor and mainly black people and Hispanics, became a key target for drug trafficking and the main group to be recruited to do the marketing. Also, by 1967, Soviet strategy included the promotion of race warfare within the West, and this strategy was reflected in Soviet propaganda, disinformation, and even industrial contracting policies.